In every political campaign, it seems the subject of education comes up, whether it's the State of the Union, the state of whatever state you're in. There's always, hey, we're doing great in education here, but here's what we need to do to fix education. And yet, when you talk to individual parents, they love their kids' teachers, but there's some frustration out there. Let me just bring up math, for example. Why is it that we seem to struggle over teaching kids math? 2 + 2 = 4. That's not debatable.
The Family Freedom Podcast. Voices of family and freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
I asked the question, why is it so hard to teach 2 + 2 = 4? Why does it seem like we're always talking about education and the perception that probably every generation seems to have is that the next generation doesn't really know nearly as much as what the current generation knows. And that may be just a little bit of bias because, you know, when you're 17, you're going to know a lot less than when, say, you're twice or three times that age. So there is some of that, that, you know, wisdom and knowledge that comes with age and experience. So that's fair. But there is also, you know, just objectively, there are certain things that are not being taught to our kids. I'll get this wrong. This is just going off of memory. But the nation's report card test called the NAEP, at one point, I think, yeah, again, don't hold me to the figures, but it was some large number, like 25% of kids in high school in America don't know that George Washington was the first president. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but the fact that you could say that and people would go, wow, that's really scary, and wouldn't immediately dismiss that out of hand as saying, no, there's absolutely no way that that's the case, that tells us there's something wrong. Either it's a perception issue or realistically, we're not teaching our kids what they need to know. Well, this is where the idea of standards comes in. You know, pretty much any organization, any sort of discipline has a set of standards. There are architectural standards, there are legal standards. So in education, the idea is that we should have some baseline minimum standards that everybody knows. And then we should test them and make sure that, yes, everybody knows that George Washington was the first president of the United States. So here in Utah, we're currently looking at a bill that is going to repeal the requirement for every high school student who graduates to have passed a citizenship test. So the arguments against that are that, you know, the kids think it's stupid. There are other ways, you know, they want kids to be civically involved. They want them to be activists. But if you don't know the baseline minimum stuff that Congress passes federal laws, that the president's term is 4 years, and that there are 100 senators, you know, in the United States Senate, 2 per state, you know, there's just some basic stuff. You know, it's like you could get into algebra, but if you don't know that 2 + 2 = 4 and 3 × 3 = 9, How well are you going to do in algebra? So yes, it may not be the ideal end of where we want our kids to be, but it is a starting point. It is at least where they need to start out. So this is where the idea of standards comes in. And it sounds wonderful. And yet it seems like we don't ever get to the point where we're getting either good standards. Everybody says they're great standards. Whatever the standards are, they're great standards. They're going to be wonderful. And this is going to be the silver bullet that solves all of our problems in education. First of all, you're dealing with human beings, so you're never going to solve all your problems in anything when you're dealing with humans. We're just individual and we're fallible, and that's just the way it is. So let's just take that off the table. But shouldn't all kids pretty much in general, third grade, know their times tables? So that seems pretty reasonable. When kids are in kindergarten, shouldn't they be learning how to count? Should they know the basic phonemes? A says A, B says B, these kinds of things, starting to read words like cat and dog and fat and sit. So the idea of standards is really, it's understandable. The problem is who decides what those standards are, what are their qualifications, and why did we adopt them? So this brings us back about a decade to 2010, when the Common Core standards were being put on the national stage. And I followed this pretty closely after the fact. In 2010, I was running for a local school board seat and had never heard of the Common Core standards. So I was elected in November of 2010. The Common Core standards were adopted by our state of Utah in August of 2010. And in December of 2010, I basically find out, hey, Utah's adopted these new standards and they're going to be wonderful. They're fantastic. They're really rigorous. That's all you ever heard. They were rigorous. They're rigorous. They're rigorous. So we have these wonderful supposed standards. These are the Common Core standards. And we find out that virtually every state in the nation adopted these standards really quite quickly. The most interesting part of that tale, to me anyway, is that you have two states in particular, Massachusetts and California, who, and you know, by all accounts, had better standards than the Common Core standards, even if you accept that the Common Core standards were good. I would argue they were mediocre at best. But let's assume that they were decent. First of all, there was no track record. There were a bunch of people. There were 24 people that sat around, came up with these standards and said, they're wonderful. They were, you know, the PR on this stuff was fantastic. Gates put a lot of money behind it. Everybody was on board. But even the Fordham Foundation, that has had decades of experience rating standards, said, when they compared all of the state standards to the Common Core standards, Massachusetts and California in particular had standards that were better, and not just a little bit, by a lot. The other interesting thing about Massachusetts and California is that their standards had a track record. So in 2010, Massachusetts had had standards that they adopted nearly 10 years before, and they had test scores on both the NAEP test, which is the national test, on the TIMSS, which is an international science and math test. And they're scoring, as a state, Massachusetts was scoring up there in, you know, second, third, and fourth place in math and science against the international countries. Well, that's really pretty good, right? Because we always hear about, you know, China, Singapore, Japan, they do really well on math, and the U.S. lags far behind. But Massachusetts, all on its own, was doing really well. California was seeing some similar, successes with their math program. They adopted a math program that prepared every kid to take Algebra 1 by the time they were in eighth grade. They saw huge closures of the achievement gap between different demographic groups, males and females, preparing kids to take, and actually preparing them, just not throwing them into it, preparing them to take Algebra 1 by eighth grade. That was a huge game changer. And kids who can do well in algebra, they do well in college. There's a lot of evidence to support that. And yet Massachusetts and California both adopted the Common Core standards. Why? Because of money. The federal government gave Race to the Top money, or the chance at it, to states that adopted common standards. And the only thing that met that description were the Common Core standards. So they jettisoned standards that were excellent, that pretty much everybody admitted were better than the Common Core standards in 2010, or roughly, in order to qualify for Race to the Top money. And my state, Utah, did the same thing. The only difference is that Utah got no Race to the Top money, and I believe that California and Massachusetts did get Race to the Top money. So basically, they sold their children up the stream for federal money. But that still brings us back to, what are standards? Why do we care? What's the difference? What you have to know about standards are is that they are supposed to be those baseline minimum things that kids are going to learn. So again, an ideal standard would say that in third grade, kids are going to know, you know, be fluent with the times tables 1 through 12. That would be a decent standard. Now, where we run into trouble is that the Common Core standards didn't just stop at that. They went on to explain not just what the kids were supposed to learn, but in many cases, how they were supposed to demonstrate that, whether it was place value or on a number line. And so that gets into what they call pedagogy, which is more of the teaching practice. And that's where you end up with differences of opinion on what's the best way to teach children this concept. Well, that really shouldn't be in a standard, because my local school may want to teach it one way and I may be okay with that, and your local school may want to teach it another way and you may be okay with that. But as long as our kids end up knowing the times tables, who cares, right? So that's what a standard is supposed to be. The other part of standards is the testing. And this is where it gets really interesting. I mentioned that I was elected in November. In December, we were told, this is 2010, in December, we were told about these new standards. One of my colleagues on the board, who had also just been elected, but had 25 years of teaching experience, her very first question was, who is doing the tests? And at the time, I didn't think anything about it. You know, I'm just a mom who ran for local school board. Tests? Well, of course you're going to have tests. And they're going to ask you whether you know the times tables or not. You know, what's 2 times 2? The answer. And you either get it right or you get it wrong. Who cares who's doing the tests? But that's the key. Because the tests don't necessarily have to just objectively say 2 times 2 is 4. One of the examples from a Pearson, the PARC test with fractions that they've released is, I think the example, again, don't quote me if I'm wrong, was 2 times 5/12. Okay. But you can't just answer that question is 5/6. It also gave you a number line. And it said, explain how you show multiplication on a number line, and then explain how you would solve this problem using the number line, and then what's the answer. And the grading rubric says that you get 1/3 of the points for explaining how to do multiplication on a number line in general, 1/3 of the points on actually solving the problem using the number line, and then 1/3 of the points for getting the correct answer. I have a math degree. First of all, what a waste of time that is. Now, supposedly that teaches you greater understanding, depth of knowledge, deeper learning, all of those buzzwords. As a mathematician, it is a complete and total waste of time. Now, if it works for your kid to learn it that way, great, learn it that way. But don't expect me to waste time writing in English how to solve a problem on a number line. If you're asking me 2 times 5/12, I'm going to do that in my head instantaneously. And the answer is 5/6. And anything else, again, for me, is a waste of time. Math is designed to be a simplified language that facilitates quick calculations and direct understanding, so we don't have to translate everything into English. So it is a pedagogy. It is a teaching method to be able to write that out. And we can debate the pros and cons. But if you're testing the number line, then that becomes your standard, whether that's in the standards or not. So that's why the testing is important. The third piece of everything is curriculum. And curriculum is the textbook or the online program that would include the teaching methodologies. And that's where, you know, parents and teachers, that's where the rubber meets the road. So when the teacher is teaching and the homework says, show 5 different ways to calculate this math thing, then that's curriculum. But it might also be dependent on the standards, or if the teacher knows anything about the test, it may also be dependent on the test. So let's go back to 2010. You're in Massachusetts or you're in California. Why would you want to dumb your kids down by having a set of standards that pretty much everybody says that they're not nearly as robust, they're not going to teach your kids nearly as much, and certainly the fact that they had never been tried anywhere before should give you a huge clue. You don't take your kid to the doctor and the doctor says, hey, we have this wonderful new whatever it is, could be a medication that's going to make your kid whatever, smarter, they won't get the flu, whatever it is. And we had 24 people sit in a room and they were a bunch of people who worked for testing companies and three people that taught, you know, that have been doctors before. But most of them are pathologists. And they sat in a room and they came up with this medication and it's going to make your kid whatever, smart, wonderful, fantastic. But we've never actually given the medication to anyone else before, but it's really good. So would you give this to your kid? And yet that's what our nation did in 2010 with education. Never been tried. 24 people who wrote these, and they could be wonderful people. But why am I as a parent trusting them, and why do I care? Why did those people get tagged for this job? And how do we know that they did a good enough job? Well, they created a validation committee. And a lot of the people on the validation committee actually had some credentials. And they, by and large, all of them said, yep, these are going to make our kids smarter and better than the rest of the world. And it's going to be wonderful. And because we have these wonderful standards that everybody should want and everybody should want their kids to know, we're going to implement it in as many states as possible all at once. And then all of the textbooks will be aligned and everybody's going to be smart and everything's going to be wonderful, right? But it's never been tried anywhere. What's interesting is one of those people that was asked to serve on the validation committee is a woman by the name of Dr. Sandra Stotsky. And Dr. Stotsky was in charge of she was the senior associate commissioner in the Massachusetts Department of Education from 1999 to 2003, when Massachusetts redid their standards. And she oversaw this process. And that process of those standards then yielded results on, as I mentioned, the NAEP and the TIMSS and advanced placement tests. Massachusetts, you could document that their kids were doing well based on these standards that Dr. Stotsky and many others were involved in putting forward for the people of Massachusetts. So she was asked, because of this experience, to sign off on the Common Core standards and say, yep, they're wonderful, they're all that and a Kit Kat. And she wouldn't. And in part, the reason why she wouldn't is because she was asked whether or not these standards were age appropriate and whether they were internationally, compatible, that they were going to be as rigorous, as demanding as other international standards. And she said there was not evidence to support that, so she wouldn't sign off on the standards. But she knows what it means to create good, solid standards. And if we could get good standards and we could test them appropriately, then this idea that came in through No Child Left Behind of every state's going to have a bunch of standards and we're going to test them and all the kids are going to be brilliant, that makes sense. It does. It makes sense. The problem is that not every state did have good standards. And so then we decided, well, we'll do good standards on a national basis, except if your kid has been struggling with math in the last 5, 10 years, that's the reason that it's a problem. If you could have wonderful standards on a national basis, arguably in theory, then that would be a wonderful idea. But if you do it wrong, then you condemn an entire generation of kids to lousy education. And that's where we are today, 10 years later. Certainly in Massachusetts, certainly in California, and there's documentation to prove it. But even in Utah, where we arguably had some room to grow in the English standards area, and we just barely implemented decent math standards 3 years prior. You talk to parents about math. You talk to the kids who've gone through the system and ask them what they thought of their education in English and math. And they're not impressed. I've had any number of kids tell me, math is supposed to build in concepts? Who knew? Obviously, we weren't teaching it well. So the reason I mentioned Dr. Stotsky is because of everybody that I know and that I've heard of who would know what good standards are supposed to look like, she's it. So I want you to join me next week. We're going to talk with Dr. Stotsky about what it takes to have good standards and how you as a parent can get a feel as to whether or not the standards that are being implemented in your state are good. We're finally seeing that possibly after 10 years, the state of Florida might be getting away from the Common Core standards. So if you're in Florida, how are you going to judge whether or not those standards are better? If you're in every other state, as you're complaining to your state board, your legislators, your local school board about the current standards and what your kids are actually being taught, how are you going to know? Let's find out from Dr. Stotsky.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the voices of family and freedom.